Gentlemen, today is June 15th, and this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It is a spectacular day outside, and we're all going to spend it in here. And we have a couple of items to work through. I know a lot of you are here to discuss aircraft fuels, but we have some work sessions that we need to address because we've got some quorum issues, and we've got some members that are committed in other parts of the building. I did want to note for the record that Senator Johnson is excused for any of the business that we're transacting today. But let me go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 5040, which is the Department of Transportation. Ms. Naburka.
Thank you, Co-Chair Comberd, members of the committee. House Bill 5040 is the budget bill for the Oregon Department of Transportation. It will take us a little bit to work through this budget. It's fairly lengthy, but I will kind of go through and hit the high points and recommendations. Should you have any questions, you can go ahead and ask. The budget that the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending for the upcoming biennium is $3.4 billion. Highlights include approving the agency's ongoing efforts to align its staff and activity levels to its ongoing revenue sources. One of the things you'll see throughout the work papers are what are called 070 packages, revenue reduction packages. All of those together total almost $21 million and reduce the agency's headcount by 82. And that's an ongoing effort that ODOT has undertaken to align its ongoing resources with its ongoing expenditures so it doesn't get out of whack as revenues flatten out. Another kind of big item in ODOT is reprogramming $50 million in highway preservation projects that had been sort of tied up with the Columbia River Crossing project that was canceled last year. That is the reason for the sort of sizable biennium over biennium reduction in the agency's budget. That project is gone, and that allows the agency to kind of reprioritize the statewide transportation improvement program and get some other projects back online. We're recommending that the DMV begin its service transformation project in the upcoming biennium. That's something that we've heard a lot about both in this subcommittee and in the IT subcommittee, involving purchasing new technologies and redesigning its business processes to go along with that. You'll see that in policy option package number 140. We're recommending a $30 million other fund expenditure limitation and 42 positions in the upcoming biennium for that project. This proposal, as I said, was really reviewed carefully in the IT subcommittee, and LFO staff from that committee wrote a memo with recommendations, and that's attached at the very end of your work session materials if you'd like to look at that. Other recommendations include implementing the acceptance of debit and credit cards at DMV offices for $6.3 million in expenditure limitation, providing $10.4 million of general fund to continue the Amtrak Cascades passenger rail service in the upcoming biennium. That's the same amount that the governor's budget had included, and it's not quite enough to fully support the service, so there are some other funds and federal funds that have been directed to that program. During the current biennium, there was a special purpose appropriation that directed general fund into the Transit Services Division for senior and disabled transit, and that's included in the upcoming budget. And then we made various technical adjustments throughout the agency's budget to correct positions and to change reporting relationships between divisions. In other words, to incorporate reorganizations that always happen during any kind of two-year period in a budget. So I did want to just highlight quickly some of the things in the work session materials. You may want to scroll along, or you may not. There are some divisions where we did not recommend any significant changes. One of those is in the non-limited transportation loan program that the agency operates. That is a fairly small $18 million program, and it doesn't see a lot of use normally in a biennium, so there was no need to increase or decrease that program too much. The agency is proposing to increase, if you're reading along, this is page 3 of the LFO work session presentation. It's proposing to add $2 million to its existing $3.4 million proposed for capital improvements. And these are building projects that cost less than $1 million. So some of the planned improvements in that area include a roof, new roof and siding at the DMV headquarters here in Salem, and some improvements in the Region 3 area in Bend, a new boiler at the Bend Truck Shop, and another boiler in the Region 3 headquarters building. On page 5, you'll see capital construction. And as you know, capital construction projects are heard in the capital construction subcommittee, so we won't hear those here. The agency does have two projects proposed for that subcommittee to consider. Both are replacing maintenance stations, one in the South Coast and one in Eastern Oregon. In the LFO report, pages 6 through 23 are all of the programs that make up the highway division, what we think of as the ODOT highway program. There are 7 divisions there, and throughout those pages, you'll see the revenue reduction packages, the 070 packages. There are a few small adjustments in there for moving positions between parts of the organization. And on page 11 of the report is the technical adjustment. It seems funny that a $50 million change could be a technical adjustment, but that's where that expenditure limitation changes to increase the preservation program and bring some of those projects online. There are two other things I wanted to highlight in the program, in the highway division. One of them is on page 21 of your materials, and that is a program reorganization. Two of the sort of higher profile programs in the highways special program division were moved into central services for the upcoming biennium. One of them is the Office of Innovative Partnerships, and that has the budget for that program was moved into Central Services because that program reports directly now to the agency's deputy director. So this aligns the budget with the reporting relationship there. The other reorganization there moves the Road User Charge Program that we heard about, that's the vehicle mileage fee program, from the Highway Division, where it was located, into Central Services. And the reason for that is that, you know, on July 1st, that program will go live, and it will stop being a project. It'll stop needing people to select vendors. It'll stop needing people to select a business system for its operation. And it will need the kind of office support instead that you would expect. It will need people to do billing. It'll need people to provide information and run reports. And that's what the business services organization does. So this moves. Sir.
When you say moved into central services, central services within ODOT?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's kind of one big change in the highway division. The other one is on the very next page, page 22, that says local government. And I just wanted to point out that while the agency has been going through revenue reductions and aligning its resources and its expenditures together, it hasn't been doing that at the expense of local governments. You can see that the local government share of the highway fund is just what the current service level would suggest it should be. The next big division in ODOT is the DMV, Driver and Motor Vehicle Services. And this is the place where the systems modernization package is. And you can see that in the LFO recommendation section, I've included basically all of the recommendations that our IT staff have put forward. ODOT's been really working closely with the Office of the State Chief Information Officer, so of course we recommend that they continue doing that, going through the stage gate process, updating their business case, and doing all of the things that they're on track to do to keep that project moving forward.
Senator.
May I ask questions as we go through, or do you want me
please.
To wait till the
end? No, please.
What is the price tag of package 140, the systems modernization?
So the total, I'm sure you didn't miss that. The total recommended expenditure limitation for the upcoming biennium is $30.4 million. This, as you recall, is a project that's expected to take about 10 years and cost about $90 million in total. This is just for the first chunk. A related project is Package 150, credit and debit card acceptance. And this just extends the agency's expenditure limitation to allow them to both charge and receive credit and debit card fees in DMV field offices. There's a technical adjustment that removes some excess expenditure limitation that was associated with the Senate Bill 833 driver cards ballot measure that did not pass. The notable change in the motor carrier division is that the agency will not be receiving a federal grant for truck safety that they had been receiving in the past, and they're proposing instead to carry out their truck safety activities with other funds, with agency funds. The reason for that is that the federal grant was focusing their motor carrier safety activities on things that have not been shown to actually reduce truck crashes. So the agency would prefer to focus its efforts on those things that it knows reduce motor carrier accidents. So we're recommending that they make that shift. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to the rail division, because in addition to passenger rail, there's another rail project in there that we might not have talked about very much. On page 37 of the LFO report is the passenger rail recommendation. There's the $10.4 million of general fund there, and you can see that there's also about almost $8 million in federal and other funds that are being used to support the service for the upcoming biennium. On page 39, there's a package called Coos Bay Rail Line, and this was the thing I didn't know if people had seen before. In the current biennium, Senate Bill 5533 authorized $10 million in lottery bonds to be distributed to the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay to reestablish their rail link from the port. So the language in the bill was real specific, that the bonds would be sold, the dollars would be deposited in an ODOT account, and ODOT would be directed to distribute them to the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay, and that's what this package would allow them to do.
Question. This package is separate from then capital construction?
Yes. This really is kind of a technical change that just allows them to pass the dollars through. It was approved in the capital construction program in the current biennium last time.
Last year? Okay, got it.
On page 42, you can see the agency's debt service. The only change we made there was to reduce the amount of lottery funds that are needed to support debt associated with Connect Oregon and with a few other projects. There was a refinancing that was done in May, and that reduced the cost of that debt for the upcoming biennium. Finally, in central services, on page 46 of 47, so close to the end, you can see where the two programs from the highway division have been transferred in. Is that the right page?
Yes.
Mm-mm. Yep, I lied. Page 47. Page 47 of 47 shows that program reorganization.
And is that the completion of your recommendations?
That is the completion of the recommendation. Thank you.
So we're ready for motion at this point?
Yes.
Senator Devlin, I wonder in Senator Johnson's absence if I could impose on you to move to accept the LFO recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, I move the LFO recommendation to HB 5040.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Senator Hensel, did you have a question?
Yeah, just for the record, I'm pretty sure I know the answer. The trial project of the 5,000 is what's being transferred over to Central Services. It is not a uniform throughout the system, but it's a trial program.
Correct.
Got it.
Other comments or questions? Yeah. I'll just mention POP 150. I'm really very pleased to see DMV moving to accepting credit cards in their field offices. There's going to be a cost of about $6 million in transaction fees for that, but it represents the charging, if I'm not mistaken, of about $300 million, which means our people are going to be handling a lot less cash, and Oregonians are going to save an awful lot of money on the ATM machines that they're currently using in those offices. So. Any other comments or questions on the motion? Yes,
are we on the full motion to?
No, we're just on the LFO recommendations. Then are there any objections to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is approved. And I think we move on to performance measures.
Yes. Thank you, that's right. So the Department of Transportation has quite a few key performance measures, so I will just hit the ones that we are recommending that they change. If I can find them. So we are recommending the addition of a new key performance measure, the deletion of six that are going to be reworked and brought back before you later, the replacement of a current key performance measure, and approval of the remainder of the key performance measures as presented. The one that we are proposing to be added has to do with the bridge condition. It will evaluate the percent of state highway bridges that are not distressed. This is a performance measure that the agency is currently using internally, but they'd like to report it to everyone else as a key performance measure. So we're recommending that one be added. There are six that are proposed for deletion, just for sort of speed of moving through the work papers. Those are numbers 2, 3, 4, 12, and 13. Several of these measures need to be reworked to better reflect current conditions. There's one that needs to be changed to better reflect federal reporting requirements. In other words, we're having to do two things, report to the feds and report on the key performance measure, and that can be streamlined. There are two that are proposed to just be discontinued because they either measure activities over which ODOT has no control, or they're not used at all by the agency as a performance management tool. And an example of that is seatbelt use. Oregon has the highest rate of seatbelt use of any state in the nation, and their safety manager has said that there's just not a lot more we can do to improve that. So we should probably focus on something else. There's one key performance measure.
Senator Monroe.
I'm very pleased with that. In 1977, I introduced the first mandatory seatbelt law in the history of the nation. And it passed the House but died in the Senate without a hearing. And the press and everybody else told me I was crazy. You're going to require people to wear their seatbelts? Well, now look where we are. Almost 100% people automatically wear them. It saved thousands of lives. It saved roughly 100 lives a year.
Well, good work, Senator, and I'll just say that that's not the the last time that good bills from the House died in the Senate.
Yes.
Mr. Burka, do you have anything else before?
I do not.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Burka, could you give me just a little more flavor on your, I think you mentioned sort of the refreshing or reformulating some of the ones that were maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but out of date or in need of some refreshing. I was particularly looking at the injuries per 100 million vehicle miles. Can you tell me some more about what the plan is for how they're going to be reformulated?
Right now, that key performance measure, if I remember correctly, measures sort of all traffic injuries per 100,000 vehicle miles traveled. The agency, and actually the state police as well, would like to focus on fatalities and sort of tighten that up because that will necessarily sort of spill over to other injuries, but those are the very worst ones.
And Mr. Chair, did you already say when we would see a reformulated set?
No, I didn't mention that. I believe that the agency was intending to bring those back for the upcoming, the next legislative
2016?
Session.
2016. Thank you.
Other questions? If not, Senator Devlin, I wonder if you'd move to accept the LFO recommendation on performance measures.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the LFO recommendations on the key performance measures as presented.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Are there any questions? Are there any comments? Are there any objections? Motion carries. Budget notes, Mr. Burka.
Thank you. There are two proposed budget notes. The first has to do with credit and debit card fees, which we've discussed quite a bit in our subcommittee. It directs the agency and the state treasurer to work together to develop sort of the means, the best method of collecting the fees charged on debit and credit card transactions. Statute already allows the agency to do this, and it's really a question of how best to do it. So this would require the agency to come back by November and, I'm sorry, by December and report on a plan to do that. The other budget note has to do with the DMV service transformation project, and this budget note was proposed by the agency. It would create a legislative work group, oversight group, to oversee the sort of short-term start of the DMV service transformation project, and then also to help the agency work on its long-term strategy to make sure that it completes its project by the end of its estimated 10-year run. The agency brought this note forward because this is a big project. It's very important. It's received a lot of attention, and it wants to continue having a pretty high level of oversight and support from the legislature.
And are you ready for a motion? All right. I'd accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendations on budget notes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the LFO recommended budget notes.
Thank you, colleagues. You've heard the motion. Are there comments, questions? Are there objections? Hearing none, motion carries. And we move on to recommended changes to the appropriation bill.
Thank you. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $27,697,995 in general fund, $107,484,140 in lottery funds, $3,181,410,367 in other fund limitation, $110,217,062 in federal funds limitation, $214 in non-limited other funds, and $21,529 in non-limited federal funds for a budget with 4,510 positions and 4,400.89 full-time equivalents. The following amendment language merely replaces on the printed bill the numbers that were in the governor's budget with the ones that we've reviewed here today.
All right. Are we ready for a final motion then?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Senator Hansel.
I'm always confused here. Do we approve the amendments, or are they automatically a part of the motion?
So You make a motion to approve the amendment, and then you do a motion that approves the entire bill as amended.
Okay.
So we're doing the amendments now.
You don't actually have that motion. So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Devlin.
I move the dash two amendments to the bill as presented and as indicated on page 3 and page 4.
Thank you, Senator.
Of the attached budget narrative.
Thank you, Senator. Colleagues, you've heard the motion to approve the dash two amendments. Are there any comments, questions? Are there objections? Hearing none, that motion approves, and now we move to the final motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 5040 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Whitson, do you have a question earlier on the final motion? Maybe, maybe not.
You will.
Yeah. We both do. I will be a no on the final vote because of the Amtrak Cascades POP number 160 that is dedicating $10.4 million of general funds to a train with 30% ridership, and so that will determine my vote.
Right. Thank you, Representative Whitson. Representative Nierman?
I should have asked this during the LFO analysis part of it, but when I was in the IT committee, I remember that I'm pretty sure that we passed the POP 140 out of there with the recommendation that nearly all of the $30 million funds were to be unscheduled, pending, and I think it was pending either meeting with LFO or meeting with the interim subcommittee or something like that. Is that still part of this, or did that get dropped?
Thank you, Representative Nierman. That didn't get dropped. It's my understanding that a scheduling and unscheduling limitations and appropriations is an administrative action. And what we usually do for that is note it in the budget report that you'll see at the full committee that will accompany the bill, and there will be a note in there that speaks to that intention to sort of unschedule the funds until certain steps are...
And so that process is moving forward, as far as you know, then, with that recommendation?
As
then.
Far as I know.
Okay. All right.
Great. Thank you. Other comments? Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Braid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank you for your work, particularly on the credit card recovery fee. I've had some discussions about that, and as the rest of this speeds by, I don't want the committee to lose track of that. I think that's a very significant thing and will result in some really good things. So kudos to you, and thanks for working. Yeah.
Thank you for those comments very much.
Can I?
Yes, Representative Newman.
I just have a few things. So, I'm going to be a no vote on this budget too, and I think there's a lot of good in here. So, one, I agree with Representative Whitsitt on the passenger light rail. I got a lot of mail on that in support of that, but I think there comes a time when you have to say that this is not really working out, and I think we're getting to that point. I would like to have seen something that at least started to open up the opportunity to do that, because there's some unwinding from some federal things that needs to be done. So I didn't see any of that. The credit card thing, I agree with Representative Reed, that's a good thing, maybe a long time coming. I'm kind of cringe a little bit at the $6 million price tag on that, especially having seen their check processing operations that they have right now. I think there'd be some kind of savings that they could put into that. And then the other thing that I wonder about is the road mileage usage thing. I signed up for that. Actually, don't tell anybody. I signed my wife up for that. But I'm trying to keep tabs on that, and I have my concerns that's moving ahead to be ready in a couple of weeks. So I just have some things like that I have heartburn about the budget. I'm excited that the DMV is going to upgrade their computer system, and I'm looking forward to keeping tabs on that in the years to come, because that's certainly, there's no question of the need on that. Thank you.
Well, thank you for those comments. And just to be very clear, we actually have two credit card issues. issues in this budget. One of them is the DMV field offices bringing credit card processing online, which will have about a $6 million cost to it. As I said, saving Oregonians a lot of money with ATM machines and saving our staff the challenge of handling all that cash. But we also have a budget note dealing with the motor carrier division, where they have been accepting credit cards for paying those taxes. And we are now looking at shifting over so that a convenience fee would be attached to those charges. In fact, saving the state, I believe, about $2 million a year, which will fill an awful lot of potholes along the way. So a couple of changes there, and the agencies have been very cooperative in making those adjustments. So all good news. Do we have anything else on the final motion? No comments, no questions. Any objections? I think Representative Witz and Representative Nierman are objecting. And other than that, the motion carries. Mr. Burke, I think we also have a limitation issue here.
Yes, thank you, Representative Gomberg. One final thing that we need to do to House Bill 5040 is approve or vote on a current biennium limitation increase. We recommend increasing the public transit federal funds expenditure limitation by $5 million to pay for some commitments that have been carried forward from the 2011-13 biennium, and increasing the highway operations other funds expenditure limitation by $15 million to fund some highway projects that have been completed far ahead of schedule because of the good weather we've had, at least for construction purposes this year.
Do you need a motion? Mr. Chairman?
Senator?
I move to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation established for the Department of Transportation Public Transit Program by Oregon Laws 2013, Chapter 556, Section 4, Sub 4, by $5 million to complete commitments carried over from the 2011-13 biennium, and to increase the other funds expenditure limitation established for the Department of Transportation Highway Operations Program by Oregon Laws 2013, Chapter 556, Section 3, Subsection 5, by $15 million to fund highway projects being completed ahead of schedule.
Thank you, Senator. One of the longer motions we've had in this committee. Are there any comments or questions? Any objection to the limitation increase? Hearing none, motion carries. And I think, Mr. Burke, that, except for carriers, wraps up work on ODOT. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Mr. Chairman, before I leave, I might indicate I was here because Senator Johnson has other duties, but I was supposed to channel her for the Director of Transportation. She believes you do not spend enough on planning, and she would like to have the next budget have more resources for planning.
Thank you, sir. I think I misunderstood you, but
straight face, Senator Devlin. Well done.
Well channeled, Senator. Thank you so much. And I really want to thank Ms. Naburka for her work on this budget. It's been a long and complex one. I wanted to thank the agencies that are involved and the members of the committee. On the Senate side, Senator Monroe, you'd like to take this one?
I would be happy to carry it on the Senate side.
Okay.
Full, if you want.
Why don't you take this one to full, and, okay, and anyone anxious to take this on the House side, I will be happy to carry this on the House side. And I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on 5040. We do have a work session scheduled on Senate Bill 131. I believe that we've got a quorum if you need to leave, Senator.
Yeah.
But I'm going to open the work session on Senate Bill 131 is relating to the Willamette Falls Navigation Canal and locks. Mr. Burka.
Thank you, Representative Gomberg, committee members. Senate Bill 131 establishes a task force on the Willamette Falls Navigation Canal and locks and directs the task force to study the issues associated with repairing, reopening, and operating the canal and locks. And the task force is to make quarterly reports to the Legislative Assembly. We do have materials available for this measure on OLIS. And we do have some amendments to consider with this bill. The -2 amendment removes the requirement that the Oregon Department of Transportation provide staff support to the task force and requires instead that Oregon Solutions at Portland State University provide staff support.
Representative Reed, would you care to move the -2 amendments to 131?
I'm pleased to. Mr. Chair, move the -2 amendments to Senate Bill 131.
Well, thank you for doing that. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Are there any comments or questions? Any objections? Senator Monroe.
Comment. This project is something that I'm really looking forward to. With the new walkway and opening up Willamette Falls for visitor opportunities, this is going to be one of the places in Oregon that people come to see. Willamette Falls has been hidden for years, literally hidden. You drive by, you can't even see it from the highway hardly. I get a glimpse. And yet Willamette Falls actually is the second largest falls in the nation in volume of water, only behind Niagara. And we ought to be exposing it and glorifying it and using it as a tourist attraction, and having the canal or having the channel reopened to river traffic is going to be a part of that. So boats will be able to go up and down the Willamette as they could 100 years ago. And this beautiful new facility with the walkway and the park and everything is going to be something. I know my friends in Oregon City, I don't represent Oregon City, I come close, but I don't represent Oregon City, but I know my friends in Oregon City, Representative Kennemer back there and others are really looking forward to this as a wonderful example of us exposing this beautiful river and beautiful falls to the public and the people from all over the world who will come to see it.
Excellent. Thank you for those comments. Colleagues, we have a motion on the dash two amendments. Any other comments or questions? Any objections? That carries. Mr. Burke, are we ready for the final motion? Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 131 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard that motion. Representative Kennemer, I see you in the audience. Were you here to say anything, or just to make sure we get it right? The latter. Okay.
You guys done it right.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being here. Colleagues, any comments or questions on the final motion? Are there any objections? Then that motion does carry. And we need carriers. And who would like to take that on the Senate side? Senator Hansel had his hand up first.
I can. I just didn't want you to have to carry everything.
Oh, that's all right, Bill. I'm happy to let you carry it. I may chime in.
Representative, before you leave, were you interested in carrying this one?
You know, Representative Barton actually represents Oregon City. I represent the suburban area. Well,
let's do this. I will take it, and unless Representative Barton would like to take that, and I'll certainly take it to the full. All right. Do we have anything else on 131? I think we are good. I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 131. And I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2075 relating to aircraft fuel. Thank you all so much for your patience as we work through a busy schedule this time of year. Mr. Burka, would you like to introduce this one?
Thank you, Representative Gombert, committee members. House Bill 2075 increases aircraft fuel taxes by 2 cents. For both aviation, gasoline, jet fuel, and motor fuel used for aviation, starting on January 1st, 2016. It allows the Department of Aviation to retain 5% of the revenue for administration, and it establishes different dedications and allowable uses for the new revenue. It establishes a process, mechanism, and criteria for distributing that revenue, and it sunsets the increase on January 1st, 2022.
Well, thank you. We have 9 people signed up to testify, and I was going to invite Mr. Jacobs, Ms. Rosenblum, and Marcia. You're not going to testify. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, while they're getting settled, just to share with the audience what I shared with you, the speaker's asked me to come to a meeting in her office in about 10, 15 minutes. So when I get up and leave, it's nothing that anyone here is saying.
Well, we will not take offense.
Thank you.
As people are being pulled all over the building this time of year.
Yes.
I noticed J.L. Wilson signed up to testify. Do you want to come up and fill out the table? Mr. Jacobs, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Gomberg and Senator Johnson in her absence, and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to present to you today. My name is Gail, nicknamed Jacobs. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Aviation Industries, or RAVI. We're a nonprofit membership organization with 85 members across the state, and we're here to talk about our support for House Bill 2075. Aviation businesses across the state that we represent are manufacturing companies, companies that build airplanes and parts, drone companies, traded sector companies primarily, a lot of operations from heavy lift helicopters to life-saving missions around the state, avionics companies, airports. And there are about 400 companies in Oregon that are associated with aviation-related. You'll see some of the representative members, to name a few, Garmin, Columbia Helicopter, In Situ, VDOS Global, and so on. So those are the companies we represent. And we work with airports in Oregon, where most of these companies are located, at or near. We have, as you know, 28 state-owned airports. 60 of them qualify for federal funding. If we can come up with a 10% match, we get 90% from the FAA. 95 airports in Oregon are public use, and there are another 300 that are private use. On that small aviation map, you'll see that when people think of airports in Oregon, they think of PDX, and they will sometimes think of Redmond and Medford and Eugene. Unfortunately, you can't see Kay Falls on there any longer. We'd like to fix that. That's a major issue. We need air service in Kay Falls. There's also Seaport, who runs small Cessna Caravans between Coos Bay, North Bend, and Pendleton, which is a very nice service. We'd like to see that extended. As we submitted House Bill 2075, we were requesting 4 cents per gallon increase. That would take avgas types of planes that private pilots and most commercial smaller operations fly from 9 cents a gallon to 13 cents a gallon. And jet fuel would have gone from 1 penny a gallon to 5 penny a gallon. And this was for aviation, transportation, and economic development. The opposition has come mainly from urban interests. Airlines, namely Alaska. We love Alaska. They have wonderful head-up displays. They donate 600 flights a year to Angel Flight West, a group I belong to, who provides free medical transportation around the Northwest and around 13 Western states. The Port of Portland, of course, is extremely successful. The port is successful. The airlines have never been more successful in the last few years than they are today, and we commend that. And we're very proud of PDX as a leading airport in the country. Fuel today is about a dollar less at the pump than it was a year ago. It's a big decrease. If the airlines were to pass on the fuel cost of a penny a gallon, it's 44 cents for every penny. So we're probably less than a dollar per airline ticket. Jet fuel has been 1 cent per gallon in Oregon for 50 years. It even went down to a half a cent for a while and we got it back. But it's been 1 penny a gallon for 50 years. Other states in our region are between 6 and 7 cents per gallon. And looking at the ODOT website today, AutoGas is 30 cents a gallon. Avgas, 9 cents per gallon, and jet fuel, 50 years later, is still 1 cent per gallon. So that's the opposition. Who's in favor? Oregon Pilots, Experimental Aircraft, Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, which is a nationwide group. Our group, Oregon Aviation Industries, definitely in favor. Oregon Chamber of Commerce. Cities and municipalities all across Oregon are very much in favor of this for local economic development and transportation. Aviation businesses see where this can really help build infrastructure so jobs can be created. Rural airports have suffered for years, and they would like to see some assistance. The Tax Fairness of Oregon Group, when they testified before the House Revenue, said when we were asking for 4 cents, we should have asked for eight. It passed unanimously from the House Revenue Committee to this committee. we want to tax our industry. We want to tax ourselves. We're asking to pay more. This is almost a user fee versus a tax in a lot of respects. Why are we in favor of this? Grant match of 1090. 10% from a local community, 90% comes in from the FAA for airports improvements, safety, and features that are needed at rural airports. Rural air service, we've got all of these beautiful airports, 95 public use airports across the state, and we're not using them. It's like having freeways with no cars. Let's put them into action. Let's bring people to the state. When those people from John Day, like our good senator who covers us over in Eastern Oregon, travels, it's a long drive. Senator Ferrioli would much rather jump in an aircraft in John Day and fly here. They have a beautiful airport. We would like to see airports maintained, improved, emergency services available, and if the Cascadia subduction actually comes, there won't be very many bridges or roads. Airports, like we've done with other tsunamis and tragic incidents around the country, Katrina, we swing into action. An economic development for all of the aviation businesses in Oregon as a cluster, we were initiated by the Oregon Business Council specifically for economic development. We'd like to focus on the businesses in aviation in Oregon, and the Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Systems, UAS, is a phenomenal economic growth potential. As you know, Pendleton just received 1.6 to do some build-out. We'd like to see that in Warm Springs and in Tillamook, the other two test zones in Oregon. Oregon is one of six states in the nation where UAS has been selected for test. So with that, Aravi supports and recommends passage of House Bill 2075, and thank you very much for listening to our presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. Why don't we hold our questions to the end of this panel, and Ms. Rosenblum?
Yes. I'll amplify this a little without going over the same information, if I may.
And although I've already mentioned your name twice, you have to do
it
yourself.
I'm sorry. Let me introduce myself. I am Mary Rosenblum from Canby, Oregon, and I am president of Oregon Pilots Association.
Thank you.
There. So what I'd like to do is really acquaint you with what general aviation is. You heard some of this from Jake, and it covers flight training, agriculture, small businesses, business aviation, people who fly to and from businesses located in rural Oregon. All these things you see up here are essentially located in rural municipalities. Generally, aviation tends to be a non-urban metropolitan part of our economy, and it is to the tune of, in 2014, $3.02 billion. And what this bill is intended to do is to amplify that economic benefit to the state significantly. We want to leverage these tax dollars to really increase that $3.02 billion. So, can you do that? I may have to change places here. There we go. So what it is that 2 cents per gallon, and we did, as Jake told you, we started out with 4 cents, a request for 4 cents, and out of concern for the concerns of the Port of Portland and Alaska Airlines, we were willing to back down to 2 cents. So we've really cut this program significantly. Our GA infrastructure in this state is failing. This is part of the problem. We have small municipalities such as Burns, which although they have available federal dollars at 90 cents on the dollar, 90 cents or 10 cents on the dollar of $1.5 million runway project is $150,000 that Burns, Oregon now has to find in its budget. This is becoming increasingly difficult, and what it does is that it's going to encourages the cities to not spend on their airports, and the federal dollars on certain types, the entitlement and the state apportionment dollars, if the funds cannot be met, they're given to other states, and they do not come back. So now we hemorrhage federal dollars, 90 cents on the dollar's worth, to Colorado, who's very well funded, and other states that are much better funded. What we have is a highway infrastructure in our small GA airports, and our urban, our municipal airports are the on-ramps. And once you close the on-ramps, the city suffers. If you really look at the difference, Representative Kenmer is gone. Good. I come from Canby. The difference between Wilsonville and Canby, I-5 runs through Wilsonville, and look what Wilsonville has become. And part of that is the Aurora Airport, by the way, which has expanded. And then we have Canby, where we're still very rural, and we're off that interstate. So when we close those on-ramps, we have a big effect on those municipalities. And Jake covered it pretty well on our fuel tax situation. I do want to say one thing. In 2014, we pumped 165 million gallons of jet fuel in the state of Oregon, taxed at a penny. We pumped 2.7 million gallons worth of avgas, taxed at 9 cents. We are funding this state infrastructure on 2.7% of the gas that we pump. And this is an incredibly disproportionate funding platform. Business Oregon today, business aviation in Oregon today is becoming increasingly important. It used to be recreational aviation was the backbone of our GA. These were post-World War II. People had a small airplane. They cost about the same as a nice car. That's not the case anymore, unfortunately. Now it's the small business aircraft. We have some fabulous examples. In Sisters, Oregon, for example, we had a private company that came in, bought the airport, got Connect Oregon money, and widened and improved the airport. In 2011, there were 7 full-time jobs related to that airport. And in 2014, there are now 65 full-time jobs that are related to businesses that have moved on to the airport. In 2011, there was 1 business at Sisters. In 2014, there were 10 businesses on that airport that have come there because of that airport expansion. That's not much in the Portland metro area, but 65 full-time jobs in the Sisters tax base is huge. The same thing has happened in Prineville, where in the last 4 years they've gone from 75 to 120 based aircraft, and they've gone from 5 full-time employees to 30 full-time employees plus seasonal. Madras is seeing the same thing. This is not a matter of build it and they will come, but they will come if you are willing to build it for them. Companies do not want to locate in the rural areas where they have wonderful power, climate, and a great tax base if they have to drive 4 hours from PDX. We're also seeing issues where we have at Klamath Falls. A lot of the regional airports are reducing their regional service. My neighbors of mine who were involved in business aviation were at a meeting with Horizon Airlines last Thursday, where they have said they are seeing an intense pilot shortage and are very concerned about how pilots will accumulate the required 1,500 hours that allow them to fly our commercial jets. This does not happen in flight training schools. It happens at small municipal airports where they can only afford to do this by becoming a flight instructor, where they can rack up those necessary 1,500 hours while teaching students. They can't affordably spend $50,000 or $60,000 to acquire those hours by renting a plane at a flight school themselves. So this is also a big part of a benefit for commercial airlines.
Thanks.
So what we're looking at is a division of 25% of this 2 cents that we've been willing to accept that will go to our commercial air service, and I have to say probably Klamath Falls, because there is a potential for that Air National Guard wing down there, which has 40% of those aircraft in the country, to move out of state. There's a real interest on the part of Arizona and Florida, which can offer commercial air service. They have to bring their own planes in now, or they have to come down from Medford. And that is 40% of the tax base in Klamath County. So this is our primary concern for commercial air service. There is a purveyor, Penn Air, that already has a proposal on how to do this and perhaps include some other rural airports, shuttling them up to Eugene or PDX. 50% of this will go to hold on to those federally leveraged dollars. The Port of Morrow right now is looking at losing $250,000 of federal money, and they will lose it for good. It will not come back, but they cannot make the grant match. And this is intended to keep that hemorrhaging from happening. We need those federal dollars here. And it will also go to economic development grants. The feds don't pay for everything. They're very particular. They pay for the safety stuff. If you need a runway extension to allow the commercial jets to land, if you need a fueling aisle or hangar space for commercial or business aircraft, the feds won't pay for that. That's got to come out of your own pocket and the municipal budget. So this would be economic development money for that. And finally, to maintain our state airports, are falling apart. We had a lot of concern. Crescent Lake is a wonderful example. The runway broke last year. We did not have the money to maintain it. And now it's closed. Fire season is approaching, and the Department of Aviation has been getting phone call after phone call. They can't get emergency services into Crescent Lake, which is in the middle of pretty much nowhere, as you may know. And now with fire season coming, they can't base tankers there if the runway is closed. So it's a real concern. When you close a rural runway, all of a sudden you can't get air support for some of these big wildland fires. It's going to be one of the worst fire seasons around. Hopefully that'll be back open. Thanks. This is just a little reminder on the state fuel taxes. We have sales taxes in Washington and California. And so if you look on the right-hand column, this is what is actually paid per gallon by commercial air carriers. So if you look at it, at 1 cent a gallon, we are a tax subsidy big time for anybody using jet fuel. We piston pilots, by the way, are not protesting 2 cents. We want a strong general aviation in the future. Okay, we'll pay 11 cents a gallon. That's fine. We would pay 13 cents a gallon. We see our future here. And finally, the bottom line is, we all know that the commercial air carriers are saying, hey, why should we pay for this? A, they've been getting a tax subsidy for a long time on jet fuel. B, we already, out of an interest in a strong international carrier service, we're already paying back. We reimburse the Department of Aviation every penny of tax paid on international flights. Since 2005, that is $1.75 million. And Port of Portland is very proud. They've done a great job. They brought in 2 new international flights coming into Portland this summer. And those are going to be a big tax bill for the Department of Aviation, paying back $100,000 or $200,000 in tax money this year. Also, the ADS Bravo system that's going into place, which you probably don't know anything about, it's a very high-tech navigation system that will allow our commercial airliners to fly more directly from point to point so they don't burn a lot of gas taking their turns at the airport. The technology that's required for that goes into the small municipal, the federally funded airports all over the country, and the commercial airlines don't pay for that. The small municipal airports pay for that infrastructure. Now they get federal dollars to help with it, but they're still the ones that are paying for that system that predominantly benefits commercial airlines. And that's also where our pilots are coming from. They are not coming from the military. They're coming from the small-town CFIs who can afford to rack up that 1,500 hours. There's a lot of benefit to the whole system. It is a statewide system, like our highway system. Just as I rarely drive in Malheur County, my tax dollars pay for the roads in Malheur County. Every citizen in the state, corporate or private, needs to pay for a strong aviation infrastructure. It particularly is important to rural Oregon. So I really thank you for listening to me. I'll wrap it up, and I really hope you consider this and let us tax ourselves for this 2 cents. It will do a lot. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Rosenbaum. Mr. Wilson, welcome.
Yep, thank you. Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the Oregon State Chambers of Commerce in support of House Bill 2075. Our organization represents 67 chambers of commerce throughout the state. And this is a bill we identified early on as one of the handful that we saw that would have a real positive impact in all corners of the state. And a lot has been mentioned about this is a very rural-centric bill, and in fact it is, and that's why we support it, because many of the small chambers get increasingly isolated from the rest of the state if their aviation infrastructure starts to crumble and not be maintained up to par. And that's the kind of thing that we're trying to avoid, and that's why we support the bill, which is very unlikely that you'd see a business organization supporting a tax. Just some components of House Bill 2075 that would give you some idea about the reach of this bill. As Mary alluded to, there's grant match funding available. 10% funding at the state level gets 90% funding from the FAA. We've got projects on the runway, so to speak, for Burns, Oregon, City of Corvallis, Christmas Valley, Seaside, Wasco, and of course, as Mary mentioned, the Port of Morrow, all eligible for federal money if we can come up with the grant money. That's a very nice geographical distribution of airports that would benefit. We have the commercial air service that, of course, we're most concerned about Klamath Falls, and that's our top priority with this bill. You have the emergency management funding port, which, of course, is predominantly a coastal issue, especially if you see natural disasters, earthquakes, tsunamis, that is a coastal airport issue. Then, of course, you have the state airport repairs that Mary alluded to that are most urgent when you have fire suppression needs. And I'm thinking particularly Crescent Lake, as Mary alluded to. We have the Oak Ridge Airport, Prospect Airport, all are critical staging areas for fire suppression, but all unfortunately experiencing runway failure and are in need of upgrades and support. And that's the kind of impact that this bill has, and it's the kind of critical work that will come in the pipeline if we pass House Bill 2075. And of course, I should also mention the economic development opportunities, especially surrounding the unmanned aerial systems that have been alluded to. Finally, I think the last thing I'll say is I think House Bill 2075 in its current form is probably the bare bones that we could get by to do the projects that we alluded to. We started off at 4 cents and, of course, would have liked to see the bill at 4 cents. And if this committee in its wisdom decided to increase it, we certainly wouldn't argue. But I would also say at 2 cents, you're looking at about the minimum to accomplish what we've set out to accomplish and we think will move the state forward in this regard. So would ask for your consideration in keeping the bill at least as it is. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so very much. Any questions for this group? Representative Whitson.
I don't have a question, but I want to thank each of you, Jake, Mary, and JL, for your hard work on this. And it's really unusual for a Whitsitt to say, let's increase the taxes. But I couldn't agree more. And I would love for you to have the 4 cents that you wanted. I don't think it's probably going to happen. But thank you very much, all of you, for your respective people that, you know, you're representing here. And this bill will mean an awful lot to rural Oregon. And I really urge, no question there, just the statement, urge its passage. And thank you all again.
Thank you. Thank you for
thank
that.
You.
Representative Nerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for either Mr. Jacobs or Ms. Rosenblum, on the federal match, the 9-to-1 federal match, how confident are you that will continue? Is that in any way in any danger of going away? Or
it's not in any danger of going away at this point. What is a danger is that the FAA will begin to reduce the airports or raise the bar on airports that it will be willing to fund. And so a robust ability to match funding is probably a very good thing at this point. Right now, the FAA tends to direct its dollars to states that have a robust matching program, and Oregon does not have a robust matching program. So we are already not seeing the maximum amount of federal funding that we could see.
To comment on what Mary just said, is that it used to be a 5% match by the local community, get 95% from the FAA. A few years ago, that changed to 10%. And that caused a lot of smaller communities to be in a problem area of not coming up with the money. They could go up to 15, but having money available in a fund where we could assist with grant matches leverages federal dollars.
Can I follow up?
So the actual match itself is not so much in jeopardy, although it could go to 85% or whatever, but that's about the same. But the point is that the request for the funding is. Or I should say the funding is competitive, and so you put a proposal in. If you get it, you're going to get the 90 or let's say 85 if things don't go right, or else you get zero if your grant isn't approved or whatever.
Yes, the FAA is never simple, right? Never. But there's a certain type of FAA grant money that is safety-oriented. Your runway needs this because it's not going to be safe. And that goes to every state. And then there's money that is offered. Okay, we have this much money. It comes from a big pot. We have this much money, Oregon. We can fund this much of your projects. Have you got matches for that? And if we say, oh, well, no, we can't, like Porto Moro, for example, then the feds say, okay, we'll give it to Colorado. Well, next year it's going to go to Colorado. It's not coming back here. And so we have already reduced in the past this type of money that is we're not guaranteed to get. It's not absolute, you must fix the safety money, because we have not had a robust matching system. When the feds decide how much money they're going to give, they say, well, you know, Colorado has lots of money for grant match. We'll offer them this much. Oregon doesn't have very much. We'll offer them this much. So if we have a more robust match, we're going to be offered more money.
Can I follow?
Follow up.
So the money that's raised by this, first of all, do you have an expected total dollar amount that's going to be raised?
I do, yes. So it'll be with the 2 cents per gallon, I'll be glad to give you the 4 cents too. let me read this. In the 2017 biennium, this first one, which is short, we're looking at the increase in revenue being about $5.2 million. That's the increase. And then for the first full biennium, 2017 to 2019, 7.4, and then the following biennium probably 7.6 raised.
And then fairly stable after that.
Right, and pretty stable after that. Probably going up slightly because the fuel consumption is tending to go up a little bit as business gets more and more jet oriented. And so this is a considerable chop from our 4 cents, which would have done a lot more, but it will do the basics. But as JL said, I really would like to reiterate that this is at the bone. We take this down any farther, and we don't have a program.
Does part of the money that comes in from that goes into this fund, does part of it go for, I don't know how to describe it, to non-safety things?
Yes, that's the economic development money. Mm-hmm. These would be things like at Prineville or one of the other small municipalities where they need a fueling island. For example, they could bring in MoGas, the unleaded gas that's becoming increasingly popular for small planes, or they say they have business jets coming in. A lot of companies will not insure jets to land on, say, less than a 6,000-foot runway. So if your runway is only 4,500 feet or 5,000 feet, you know, this is an issue at Aurora where they need a runway extension to handle the larger biz jets. They're becoming as busy as Hillsborough and businesses moving in. But the feds say that's not a safety issue. You can just land smaller jets there. So this money will not be funded by federal dollars. It's going to have to be funded by economic development money. So this is where this type of dollars are not going to be leveraged by the feds, but they will have economic importance, because if you need the infrastructure, like big hangars for jets, you need the fueling island, then the company like Facebook or Apple says, oh, great, you got the temperature, you got cheap power, you have a nice rural tax base, we can bring our jets in here, we'll come in. And this is the importance.
So can I follow?
Okay.
So I'm still not understanding this. These economic development projects, do they come out of the pool that's created by the increase in the gas tax?
Yes, they do. They're part of the 50% that covers the leveraged federal dollars, and then also some of that money can go towards economic development that the feds won't cover.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes.
Senator, you had a question?
Well, comment, please. And question, perhaps. Mr. Co-Chair, I, for one, am more than willing to vote for the 4 cents or 3 cents. I think if we just do the 2 cents, we're depriving this state of needed infrastructure, especially with the forest fire season that's supposed to be the worst we've ever seen coming on, and the need for these airports to be available to fight fires, the business climate, the fact that outside of the Willamette Valley, we're a rural state, and we're a state with huge miles, and these small airports become even more critical in those situations. 90% match is an incredible amount of match, and even if it went to 85%, that's still a way better match than we get for highways or for transit. It seems to me that we ought to be availing ourselves of that additional match. They told us what they really need is 4 cents, but one airline decided they didn't want to go along with that, and so they cut it to 2 cents. Well, I don't think we should have one airline, even a good one like Alaska, dictating policy to this state when we badly need the air infrastructure. So not only would I support 4 cents, but I would lobby the urban delegation. I've been around them, guys and ladies, for quite a while. I'd be happy to lobby them for you if, in fact, you and Senator Johnson wanted to go for 4.
All right. Thank you for that feedback. Anything else for this panel? Yes, Representative Witt.
I agree with the senator that 4 cents is important. It's important to maintain economic development in this state. It's important to maintain our airport infrastructure. I think the airline that's been mentioned is fully capable of sending someone here to testify. I don't know if they're on the list. I'd be interested in hearing from them, and like to see Klamath Falls repaved, and a special invitation to that airline to begin service there with a brand newly paved runway.
All right. I'd like to thank the three of you, and bring up Ms. Williams, Mr. Hagedorn, and Ms. Howe. You decide which order you'd like to start in.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Williams. I'm the State Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland, located at 7200 Northeast Airport Way in Portland, Oregon. The port owns and operates 3 airports, Portland International Airport, PDX, as well as 2 general aviation airports at Troutdale and Hillsborough. I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today on House Bill 2075. We have appreciated being invited to participate in the many conversations around a jet fuel tax increase and how thoughtful stakeholders and members have been regarding potential impacts to our airports and carriers. Initially, we had 3 main requests relating to the legislation, and 2 have largely been addressed. We support both the change to a 2-cent increase as well as the addition of a 6-year sunset. However, I want to make one comment about the port's 3rd area of interest, and that is the distribution formula. Under the current bill, the majority of the proposed revenue generated by the increase will go towards FAA grant match, general aviation purposes, rural aviation economic development, things you've heard about from people who were up in the previous panel. This means that the majority, if not all, of the funds raised go to airports other than those where the fuel is sold. We continue to express an interest in a portion of funds, not all the funds, but a portion of the funds generated from this tax to be returned to the airport of sale. And this isn't just PDX. This is PDX, Medford, Redmond, Eugene, etc. As the commercial and cargo airlines serving PDX will pay the lion's share of this tax, we are sensitive to their concerns and believe they would be well served by further tweaks to the distribution formula. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Howe. I represent the city of Eugene. The city has a municipal airport. We're one of the six smaller commercial service airports that include Eugene, Medford, Redmond, Klamath Falls, we still count them, North Vancouver Bay, and Pendleton. At Eugene Airport, we fight to attract and retain airlines and routes to meet the travel needs of our community. For instance, we adjust our rate model so that airlines don't have to pay the full amount of rates and charges that we could charge them so that we stay competitive in the market. That amounted to about $1 million in charges that the airlines could have paid last year that we did not charge them, and it'll be even more in this fiscal year. The city and Eugene's business community have offered incentives to mitigate startup costs for airlines operating in their first year to entice them to come to Eugene. So we are very concerned that this increase, even a seemingly modest 2-cent increase, will make it harder for Eugene to maintain and expand service. This is because fair competition is fierce, so instead of passing costs on to customers by adjusting ticket prices, airlines look at the cost of cost per in-plane passenger in each market, including fuel costs, which is only one of very many costs to the cost of departure. If our fuel costs become out of line with other markets, they will move their service to a more profitable market. An additional concern is voiced by my colleague at the Port of Portland, is that revenue raised by this increase will not provide any benefit to the commercial service airports that are served by the airlines impacted by this tax. Instead, the revenue generated by the tax increase will be used mostly for other aviation purposes in the state. To address these concerns, we would like to see a portion of the funds raised by this tax come back to commercial service airports where the tax was generated, which includes our urban airports, but also a number of rural airports. Eugene's goal with these funds would be to mitigate the effect of the cost increase by either rebating it back to airlines or putting it back into lowering airline rates and charges, thereby decreasing the cost to airlines of flying in and out of Eugene, and we feel that would help us retain and expand service, especially with the 2021 World Outdoor Track and Field Championships coming to Eugene, which will bring over 30,000 people to Oregon and to the city from around the world. We want to keep and expand routes as much as possible, and this tax increase raises costs and makes it harder to do that. That's why it's particularly important at this time to have some of this revenue come back to Eugene and other commercial airports to help us keep and expand service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Domberg. Members of the committee, I'm Drew Hagedorn, appearing today on behalf of Alaska Airlines. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon, and I would like to commend all the good work that's been done by the proponents and other stakeholders, policymakers, in amending and advancing this bill through the legislative process. I think I'd like to echo both of my colleagues who have suggested that we'd like to take a look at some tweaks to Section 7, if possible, given that commercial air carriers will be paying the lion's share of the tax. It seems to us prudent to have at least some of that revenue return back to those commercial airports where we fly in and out of. So we offer that for your consideration, and thank you very much for your time and attention to this important issue.
Well, thank you to the three of you. I wanted to begin with a question. We talked about the competitive advantage or disadvantage that a price increase, a tax increase would entail. And we saw some figures earlier for neighboring states in California, Idaho, and Washington. Who else is in the same kind of range that we're currently in or considering moving to? Could you provide us any feedback? When you talk about losing a competitive advantage, who are we losing that to?
Chair Gomberg, I can't talk about, well, I think the slide earlier had where we are relative to other states on jet fuel tax only, but I think for us at PDX, what we think about is the total cost of doing business at the airport, something that sometimes airlines refer to as the total departure tax, and that can be everything from property taxes, payroll taxes, excise taxes. We think relative to some of the airports that we compete with, which are SeaTac, Salt Lake, Oakland, we are on the jet fuel tax certainly lower, but when you look at all the taxes and fees that all the airlines are paying, we are fighting
every day to keep our service. We recently had a cargo carrier go up to Seattle temporarily because of some rehabilitation that we were doing at PDX. The fuel costs were lower, and they never came back. So I can't answer the question relative to just this one cost, but we look at the total cost, and we try to remain as competitive as we can with all the taxes and fees that airlines are paying coming in and out of PDX.
That answer is helpful, particularly given some of the comparative numbers we were looking at a moment ago. Senator?
It would seem to me that I know if you're in a community of, and I'm assuming your community as airports would be, say, the Western United States, but if I'm driving my car in a community like the size of Salem, I learn fairly quickly where the cheapest gas is to buy, and I make sure that I gas up there more often than not. I'm assuming that the same might be true in the airline industry. If Portland is the cheapest place currently to obtain petroleum products, that your volume might be skewed a little bit because of that, that planes tend to fuel up where the gas is the cheapest. Would that be true?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, I would have to look at the patterns of fueling based on when they come in, how empty or full their tanks are, and probably need to get back to you with an answer to that question. I'm not sure that airlines are filling up at PDX because it's cheaper. Maybe I could pass that question to my right, to Alaska, but I have not heard that as a kind of an effect of having a lower jet fuel tax in Oregon.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, I don't have an answer to that question. I could check with my client and see if we can get some more illumination on that topic.
Sure, if it isn't that obvious, then what difference to make what price we have? Because you'll get the gas anywhere, and if we're still cheaper, I mean, I don't understand. If you're not gassing up in Portland, what difference does it make what the price is, because you're not buying it there anyway? If there's no incentive to get the gas there when we're cheaper, why would there be any incentive there if we raise it higher?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, I'm presuming, and I don't know the answer to this question specifically, so I will ask my client and get back to you with more information, but there's probably a variety of metrics to go into an airline's decision of where they're going to fuel that are just beyond the scope of price. So I'll check back and see what I can offer you on that topic.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Whitson.
Thank you. So we heard testimony that this would cost a commercial ticket $1 per ticket. And so is that a pass-through for them to recover the cost of the increase in fuel that the jet is using? They're going to add $1 onto the ticket, so the passenger actually pays that $1, which is the increase?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, my understanding from talking with the Eugene Airport and one of our small ultra low-cost carriers, Allegiant, is that because fare competition is so fierce, they won't necessarily pass that cost along, and so it's not as simple as you'd expect, like your grocery store cost to, you know, your milk expenses go up or whatever. But that they'll look at basically how much they want to sell a ticket for and say, if I can't sell the ticket for that much money in this market, I'll find a market where I can.
Follow-up. May I suggest that they do add $1 on if they're so concerned about it? I don't think the passengers are going to mind paying $1 more on a ticket for this. So just an observation. Thank you.
Any other comments? Well, I wanted to thank the three of you for spending some time with us this afternoon and for your patience as we got to this item on the agenda. I'm going to call Chris Korlich and Bob Hall.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Korlich, and I am here testifying as a former 9-year member of the State of Oregon Aviation Board, but also in my background is 19 and a half years as long-range planning at Portland International Airport. And I would like to address the question of Senator Hansel on what's called tankering fuel. That's the term for when you bring fuel in from another airport. airlines are working very hard to make their planes as absolutely light as they can because they have to carry every pound of every pound they carry is a pound they have to burn fuel to carry. So the goal is to get the plane as light as possible. So it's probably pretty unusual if they're going to say, oh, gee, let's buy a bunch of extra fuel, a significant amount, because it's cheaper in Portland. It is cheaper in Portland than our surrounding states because the taxes are dramatically lower. But they don't come here and fill up and carry it away unless there's some other reason. If there's no fuel available at the next stop, maybe they would do something like that. And folks from Alaska Airlines can contradict me if I've got that wrong, but I think I've got it probably pretty right. The other thing, and I submitted written testimony, but there's one point that I would like to make, if I might, that I think is very important that this bill would do, and that is it would provide a small additional level of support to the Department of Aviation. Many of the small airports, most of the small airports around the state do not have a professional airport manager. They are deer in the headlights when it comes to the regulations that the FAA has. The formulas, the process of giving them that FAA grant money is Byzantine, and it's only getting worse. And Mitch Swecker and his staff, and being on the department for 9 years, I watched this. They do a great job in helping these small airports get the money, maximize it, and deliver a decent project. This money will help that department, and that's absolutely vital to those small airports around the state. So I was ready to cry when I heard you talking about raising it back to 4 cents. I mean, I've watched the fuel revenue decline in the 9 years, and it's been painful to watch what has happened to that department. It's been decimated. Part of it is private pilots like me are not flying, so I'm not buying aviation gas. But the other part is something we ought to be really happy about. The airlines are flying more efficient planes, and they're filling those airplanes up, so less fuel is being burned. Gas prices are down, ticket prices are down, that's good. There's less carbon being put into the atmosphere. That's all good. But if your department depends on jet fuel sales and avgas sales for a great part of its funding, which most of the state aeronautic departments do, then this is a difficult, difficult thing. And this department, that's the one thing I haven't heard really emphasized. Those guys do a great job. So I really encourage you to take this to heart. It's an important department that is just... And I have asked, is there another way that we can fund this without raising the jet fuel tax? And I look at the impact of that tax, and it's less than half of a decaf latte at the airport. It's less than the value of 2 gallons of gas that I spent to drive down here today in the gas tax that I'm paying. So I don't think that it's going to ruin an airline, and I don't think it's going to make me change my driving or my flying pattern. I'm flying to San Jose, and I bought a ticket on Alaska Airlines, and I'm going to check a bag. I'm going to pay the $25. It's just the cost of doing business. But airfares are great. I am delighted. Alaska is doing well, and I love PDX Airport. I worked there for 19 years. So anyway, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you. And we do have your written testimony, and if airplanes flew on decaf latte, I think ticket prices would be much higher.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Mr. Hall.
Thank you, Chair Gumberg. My name, for the record, is Robert Hall. I reside in Portland, Oregon. I've been an active pilot in the state of Oregon for an excess of 50 years. I'm going to testify today in favor of House Bill 2570 Alpha A. Sorry, jumping into airplane stuff. I'd like to bring a little bit different approach to this. I totally agree with the previous speakers in favor of the bill. But when Oregon established its highway funding system clear back in the early 1900s, we based the system based on the amount of damage caused to the highways by the vehicles that use it. Cars pay a gas tax. They're lighter. Trucks, the heavier trucks, the more miles they drive, the more they pay, i.e. the weight mile tax. The tax we've used in the state of Oregon to fund our airport system is absolutely the opposite. As has been testified here today, light GA aircraft, general aviation aircraft, pay 9 cents a gallon. Jets are paying 1 cent a gallon. The jets are the heavier aircraft by far. And this is kind of an upside-down funding mechanism, at least the way as I see it. When the tax was first proposed on aviation gas, again back in the early 1800s, all aircraft, whether it was a Super Constellation, the big international, the 747 of the 40s and 50s, but they all used avgas. Well, the jets began to come in the 1950s, and the avgas at that time, or I mean turbine gas, turbine fuel, JP4, was put in at 1 cent per gallon and has never gone up. If you want to factor cost of living into that factor, their percentage of fuel has gone down year by year by year by year. Something else to think about when we're talking about this is that most people think, like it's been brought out here today, the airliners, the jets coming out of PDX, are the ones using the jet fuel. While that may have been true back in the 50s, it's not necessarily as true today as it was, and that number is declining significantly as I talk. Currently, there's 471 turbine or jet-powered aircraft registered actively in the state of Oregon. There's a total of 4,042 active aircraft registered in the state of Oregon. That's 11.65% of registered aircraft in Oregon use Jet A fuel, turbine fuel. The majority of these are small business jets that we're seeing more and more in each year. This does not include a huge number of jets that fly into Oregon for business reasons, whether it be Redmond, Klamath Falls, Grants Pass. Grants Pass sells jet fuel out of a truck. That they come in there for business, they fuel up and leave. And they are the ones that are causing the vast majority of wear and tear on our runways, taxiways, and aprons. Just as an example of what we're talking about, multi-engine aircraft that use Jet A, a typical aircraft, and I'm talking business aircraft now, let's say, for instance, a Citation II. They've got a gross weight of 12,500 pounds. The Citation Jet, 10,500 pounds. The Learjet 45 has got a gross weight of 21,750 pounds. Even the King Air 200, which is a twin turboprop made by Beech, very actively used, that's got a gross weight of 12,500 pounds. Let's talk about multi-engine aircraft in general use today that use avgas. A good example might be the Cessna 401, twin engine, gross weight 6,300 pounds. Piper PA-31, gross weight 7,000 pounds. Now, these numbers that I'm giving you are not exact because the aircraft are built to slightly different configurations. This is an average number from the manufacturer that I picked off the internet. A good example of the light aircraft that use avgas in this state, single-engine light aircraft, would be, say, a Cessna 182. There's airplanes that are heavier. There's airplanes that are a lot lighter. But that is just a good average weight when you're looking at the GA fleet. They've got a gross weight of 3,100 pounds, way underneath what the turbine-powered aircraft have got a gross weight as. There's something else that has been brought up just slightly earlier in the context of a passenger airliner, and that's the Cessna 208. FedEx uses a lot of those airplanes flying around the state. That's called the Cessna Caravan. That's a turbine-powered, prop-driven aircraft with non-retractable gear. They go into PDX all the time, and they're picking up and dropping off packages all over the state at the smaller airports. Their gross weight is 8,750 pounds. Now, using the principle of the heavier aircraft cause the most damage, they're the ones that should be paying the most. Well, they're not, and we're not even asking them to. We're saying that we have got to get more money and dollars into our airports infrastructure in this state of Oregon. GA was willing to kick in 4 cents. We've agreed to the 2 cents. And truthfully, I haven't talked to one pilot on this, on the GA side of it, that hasn't agreed, yes, we've got to get more money in. No, I don't like a bigger tax, but yes, I do support increasing the taxation. We're paying our way. One other thing, somebody we were talking about earlier in the House Revenue Committee asked, well, are the business aircraft really getting that more popular? A good example might be a new aircraft that is in the process of being certified now called the Honda Jet. The Honda Corporation is putting tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into certifying a brand new business jet. It's flying now, and I think it's probably due to be certified in the not-too-distant future. But the point is, these major corporations are putting money into building these aircraft. Business is using them. They're using turbine fuel, and they're not all flying out of PDX or Eugene. They're going into Redmond, Grants Pass, Medford, Troutdale, which is the Port of Portland, and all airports. So I'll be glad to answer any questions, and I urge your aye vote on 2075A.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions for either of these two? Yes, Senator.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, we heard the need, and the need's not 2 cents, it's 4 cents. We also heard the airports that are selling this fuel say, we ought to get a bit of a share of it. Seems to me that there's room for negotiations on those two issues, and I would certainly urge you and Madam Co-Chair, who's trying to get us a transportation deal right now, to work on that and come up with a plan.
Noted. Thank you all.
I support Senator Monroe's plan, too. So.
Representative Whitsitt, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. I just make the comment that I'm unaware of any price differential on a commercial airline ticket. I don't think it's the half fare that I would pay if I only went one way is cheaper if they fill up at an airport where the jet fuel is cheaper, or more expensive for the half fare that I would pay if they were flying out of Portland. That's point number one. Point number two, in the last half decade or better, I'm unaware of airlines being at all bashful about putting in some kind of fee increase for this, that, and everything else. Pretty soon there's going to be a fee to have a seat on the plane. The fare buys you entrance into the jetway. But so I don't think that Representative Whitsitt's suggestion that we could add a buck to the airline ticket would anyway grossly inconvenience an industry that it puts fees on literally everything in this day and age. I'm for 4 cents.
Well, thank you, committee members. You know, I used to fly a lot myself, not as a pilot, but as a traveler. I've got a card in my pocket that says I've gone 2 million miles. And, and I used to do a lot of traveling to Bangkok, Cape Town, and Paris. And now, since I've been elected, I spend my time traveling to Beaver, Yachts, and Tillamook.
They're fine airports.
So, yeah, yes, Senator.
The only word of caution I would use is that there's been a lot of negotiations that have happened behind the scenes, and I would hate for us to blow something up in our enthusiasm here. I mean, we can give you, you know, our thoughts and encouragement, but, you know, I don't want to quite negate the fact that there's been a lot of work put in on this, and it could well be that 2 cents is the best that we should do at this time.
Well, thank you for that cautionary note. I agree. I think there's been a lot of work behind the scenes to get it to 2 cents, but I would like to say that the 2 cents increase should be appropriated the way that the aviation group would like it to be, department would like it to be, and that we not enter into further negotiations of giving this to other airports or whatever. I think this is a bill that they want for rural airports, and I think it should stay there.
I concur.
All right. Is there anybody else here to testify on 2075? If not, thank you all. I'm going to go ahead and close the hearing. Mr. Burke, do we have anything else?
Representative Gomberg, not today. Tomorrow, you will be here for the Bureau of Labor and Industries and a couple of courses.
Excellent. All right. Well, then, if there's nothing else, committee, we are adjourned. Committee, we are adjourned.